and assure success.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. Just wanted to give a shout out to James Burns on Freedom Files, just because, you know, he's pretty freaking awesome. And I went out to a botany by-election meeting last night, Will. And as expected, the National Party candidate had dead eyes, no smile, and certainly was about as interesting to listen to as eating sawdust through your nose and your eye sockets. I'm not kind of keen, you know, on party hacks anymore. You know, I figure that if anybody supports a party per se, it means that they're subscribing to groupthink, and so therefore they don't think for themselves to any effective measure. You know, that's my objection with it, but I'm not sure what to make of it. Are we living in a society now where the only people who would actually wind up getting into positions of political power or party favoritism, the type of scum who sell out 100% of the time? I'd probably say that's more likely the case than any other factor. What do you think, Will?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just, if anyone's ever been to any local government meetings here in New Zealand or anywhere in the world, I'd hasten to guess, I mean, it's just totally nihilistic and boring and makes you want to cut your wrist, to be honest. And it's the level of ineptness of some of these people. It's staggering. Staggering.
Well, yeah.
For them to gain so much, you know, so many votes, so much public appraisal in the first place to be there, blows my mind. It says a lot for the scum who run about in society voting for them, doesn't it? I mean...
Well, yeah, like you say, I mean, perhaps mainstream politics is the reason why there's so many depressed emos.
I'd say that's probably a combination of factors, but yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B.
I mean, maybe something to do with our total death culture and everyone wearing skull and bones t-shirts around. So. Yeah.
Oh, man. In fact, that reminds me of the time Linda Andrews on the Vinnie Eastwood Show Facebook group, she put up this picture this one time of baby clothes that have skull and crossbones all over them, you know? And not,
it's so
and
it's just on everything these days. I mean, it's on like, women's underwear and there's all sorts. We're just a skull and bones cult these days. And, oh, don't take it so seriously, Will. It's just a pirate symbol. It's got nothing to do with the Templars being pushed out of France in 1307. Nothing to do with the Masons.
Yep. If you love life, why don't you adorn yourself with skulls? That's sure way to success. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 402-237-2525. We'll be right back.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned, they like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
I'm flying. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. In the news today, a Kiwi soldier has been killed in Afghanistan. And no, he hasn't been killed protecting freedom or anything like that. He died because the Humvee that he was in rolled off a cliff. Now, I'd have a joke about that, but it makes me too freaking angry. If our boys are being sent over to countries where there's basically no reason for them to be there in the first place, and they die, for some reason, I'd rather they die in combat, you know, rather than some ridiculous little accident on a routine check, etc., etc. You know, I mean, they may as well have just been here at home, driving around on our substandard roads, and getting into car accidents, which would be one third as likely to kill them as the Ministry of Health will be. You know, and Murray McKelly, our defence minister, and I don't know how people can relate to this, but I don't know how many people out there are listening whose current troops are in foreign countries for no good reason and dying for even ridiculous reasons. That's even a word, which I assume that's not. You'd probably understand this kind of rhetoric. Oh, well, it's for the country's protection. It's sometimes necessary to put our people in harm's way. Okay, riddle me this. What threat does Afghanistan pose to New Zealand? A1, it's on the other side of the world. B2. I don't have no air force to speak of, so I'm not sure if we're going to have some description of, you know, air raid attack. You know, the Afghani Luftwaffe going to come in on us. It's just not going to happen. I mean, at best, they'd be so high on heroin that they create that they'd be able to float all the way down here in order to threaten our democracy, but perhaps not.
Threaten our democracy, and that's the biggest joke of it. I mean, yeah. What exactly, what threat do even if it's true, even if there are these just foaming at the mouth Islamic fundamentalists just wanting to rip us to pieces, and they're the other side of the planet right now, and they shouldn't be able to get down here. Probably more likely to get to Australia. Being a lot less water in the way, but
well, that's all good.
What threat do they pose over and above John Key selling this country out at $300+ million a week or $450 million a week, according to BNZ? You know, what greater threat do they pose than the armies of banks that are already attacking this country with the consent of most of the idiot voting population? I'd like to know that for a start. And then you get these people saying, oh, it's the ideological, you know, Islamic threat. And look, I'm not an Islamist. I'm no fan of their sort of vehement fundamentalism and hatred of infidels. That some of them, a strict minority.
Extremely, you know, small minority.
Espouse. But, I mean, yeah, we have got hardcore cultists of a different kind running all our countries, and because no one sees that, because Fox won't put light on that.
Oh, Will, are you still there, mate? We seem to have lost him. Okay, well, that's unfortunate. Anyway, moving on, 402-237-2525 is the number to call in to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, ladies and gentlemen. And what we're talking about here is the fact that if we've got like some description of criminal gang or cult or religious fanaticism group trying to threaten our freedoms, or something along those lines, maybe it's an idea to remind yourself just what is a cult, just what is a criminal gang, just whom are these goons of which we speak? More to the point, where did they come from? Radical Islam, which is now being touted as this, you know, this grand design boogeyman who's capable of overthrowing nations and blah, 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 blah. All CIA funded, of course. You know, I couldn't conceive of a nation that can survive without some description of fundamentalism, right? Because it's the fundamentalism of varying degrees and kinds that stop things from happening to your country. For example, if New Zealand was ruled by, I don't know, let's say a public ownership fundamentalist, we wouldn't have all our assets being sold out from under our asses, would we? Just the same as fundamentalist Islam is also a protection barrier. It's like a political condom, if you will. You're unlikely to contract certain globalist diseases if you have a very, very strong, Islamist religious contingent ruling your country, because they'll go like, "Hey, wait, hold on a second, that's not cool. I don't like that." Blah blah blah. But on the other hand, like I said, Muslim Brotherhood and many other groups, and it's always the violent ones, always the violent, radical ones that you always wind up being funded by intelligence agencies. You know, I can't believe it. It drives me friggin' nuts how everybody in the political spectrum goes, "Oh, here's a small, completely ridiculously isolated incident. Let's pass legislation to make everybody a slave." As has happened with the anti-terror legislation in New Zealand, and in more recent news, the passing of the Patriot Act again. Now that kind of freaks me out. Well, I wouldn't say it freaks me out, because, well, I expected it to happen. Because the Congress and the Senate are either A, that retarded, or B, that frickin' corrupt, but they would pass legislation which pretty much violates the entire US Bill of Rights and Constitution, as we are trying to do here in New Zealand now with the Search and Surveillance Bill. A particular National Party candidate, Jamie Lee Ross, it was last night at the Botany by-election meeting. I asked them, what are you going to do about the gradual wholesale erosion of our civil liberties, such as the Search and Surveillance Bill, where a police officer will be able to come into your home, and not only just a police officer, up to 70 different government organizations will be able to do this, including such wonderful intelligence gathering organizations such as the Pork Board. I can't believe it. Are going to be able to come into your home without a warrant, set up surveillance cameras, and surveil you for up to 3 days without any oversight whatsoever. I will say that again. They will be able to, 70 different government agencies will be able to break into your home and surveil you with security cameras which they can install in your roof or whatever the heck, for up to 3 days with no oversight. Nobody needs this much surveillance power, least of all the police, who already have copious quantities of surveillance power, and they don't need any more. And Will, I believe you're back on the line here.
Yeah, mate, yeah. You know, it's just concerning to see this 10-month extension of the Patriot Act. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it was passed in the House 275 to 144. You know, 275 to 144. And so we got people out there, and I hear it all the time. Everyone knows, you know, everyone knows the US invaded Afghanistan. Everyone knows 9/11, this, that, and the other. Everyone knows. You don't need to keep harping on about it. Everyone knows, you know, civil liberties are being destroyed. Everyone knows. Really? And so then we have, you know, in the House of Representatives, 275 people in favor of it. In favour of it. How can that be? All these years later. You know, it's 10 years later now. And
ten years after Michael Moore cruised around Congress in an ice cream truck reading them out the Patriot Act, because they'd never freaking read it. And even with 10 years to read it, they didn't have time to read it in the first place, but they sure as F had time to read it in the previous 10 years, didn't they, Will? But they didn't, exactly. Did they?
In the following 10 years, they had time to read it, of course. And there's been so much press about it, and especially in sort of around 2007. I mean, you know, and all I see is, you know, if you Google Patriot Act, you'll see Patriot Act, and it'll come up Patriot Act pros and cons being one of the main options. Pros and cons. And then you've got these middle-of-the-line idiots going, oh, it's good because it cuts down the bureaucratic red tape and allows more communication between agencies. You know, the NSA can just have a field day here and they can work more effectively. Oh, it's so good for defending our liberties. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I mean, they just need to read the works of Thomas Jefferson, even. You know, those who believe in giving up temporary security in exchange for liberty deserve neither. You know,
It's funny that you say that. Because when I asked at the Botany by-election last night what these clowns, sorry, politicians, are going to do about their eroding our civil liberties under the search and surveillance bill, what Jamie Lee Ross, the National Party candidate, said is that I am prepared to give up my freedoms for security, right? Almost the exact diametric opposition for what the Founding Fathers would just say. And he's in the
National Party and calls himself conservative. They know nothing.
They know nothing. Absolutely nothing. And basing that as our premise, you know, it's just like politicians know nothing, suddenly the whole system makes sense.
Well, politicians, you know, as a profession, are amongst the least trusted internationally of any profession. I think it's like politicians and then doctors or something. I mean, politicians are right up there, number one, number two in most Western nations. And then at the same time as that exists, and everyone gripes about politicians from here to freaking Istanbul, but at the same time, I hear people, just mediocre, just average people, going, I'd rather give up a few freedoms for security. So you're giving up freedoms to who? The least trusted profession. Really?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What sense does this make?
Seriously, it's like a burglar walks into your house with a crowbar and he says, "Hey, do you mind if I have your keys?" And you're like, "Yeah, sure, not a problem. I'm sure I can trust you."
Yeah, as long as the burglar is wearing an official uniform and he's got like burglary department, Department of Homeland Burglary, a nice blue jacket with like some like a 3-letter acronym on the front. Yeah, I'm FBI. I'm tough. You know, like as long as it looks official.
Federal burglary institution.
I mean, people are just so stupid. I mean, they give in to officialdom. I mean, you can walk into. I mean, if you don't believe this, try this tonight. You go and find a local restaurant, and you walk in there, and you look at the name of a restaurant across the road somewhere, and you walk in there looking respectable and confident, and you walk up to the manager and you look at them in the eyes and say, "No, I want a couple of pizzas, or I want XYZ on the so and so account from across the road." They will give it to you. They will give you the food. They will give you $100 worth of food. They're stupid. People give in to authority. As long as you're good at fronting something, you can rip people off to high water. I mean, they just don't care. People are not analytical.
Well, it reminds me actually of a study that Harvard University conducted where they had a person on the other side of a screen attached to an electric shocker, and the test subject were actually the people administering shocks whenever that person got a question answered wrong, right? They'd give them a shock and the shocks would go up in varying degrees. Now, because the study was being conducted at Harvard University and they had people in lab coats, and you're like, oh, it's so prestigious and stuff like that, they found out that people really, really do trust authority, and they trust that credibility, even to the point where they would hurt other human beings. It was only like 1 in 10 people will say, no, I'm not going to hurt other human beings. I don't care what your qualifications are or anything like that. Severe minority will actually stand up for humanity no matter what. The vast majority will follow fascism so long as it's got a nice uniform on.
And they're so hypocritical too, these people, because if you actually put a knife in their hands, this little pocket knife I got here in front of me, I mean, if you actually put a knife in their hands and you made them stab an animal and cut its guts out, I mean, they wouldn't be able to do it. They would not. Most people just, you go rabbit shooting or something, you skin a rabbit, you turn it inside out and pull its guts out with your two fingers and just rip its hardened lungs out and just drop it straight into the water or something. I mean, most people will freak out. They can't handle it. But at the same time, these people are legislating murder. You know what I mean?
Well, it's absolutely
paradox. It's an amazing thing. It's just like if you took a chicken and wrung its neck in front of most people, they'll freak out. But if they go to the supermarket, they can buy 10 of them, and they can feed their faces all night long. I mean, you know...
Well, yeah, and speaking of freaking out, there's an interesting article in here from Guerrilla Media. San Diego port officer says nukes have been found in an American port. Like, holy cow, man. You watch the video on this one. It's quite interesting. A little News 10 reporters cruising out to San Diego ports and stuff like that, asking the Port Authority, and they're now scanning all these trucks and everything, you know, for nuclear material, you know, because obviously weapons of mass destruction are all over the United States, most of them in military facilities under lock and key, of course. But apparently, according to Gordon Israel, I think from VeteransToday.com, there are a few missing nukes out there. Mm-hmm. And this guy in San Diego, who's a port officer, says that they have found a nuclear device somewhere around that particular area. But they wouldn't specify where. And when the news station seek to clarify on this, public relations person steps in and says, you can't talk about that, right? And then they ask Homeland Security, what's this guy talking about? And Homeland Security goes, he must have been nervous during the interview and just you know, said something that just plain wasn't true. Really? How interesting is that? I would hasten to guess that maybe, and this is something that I'm more looking at as a possibility day by day, is that there will be a nuclear attack in the US staged by the government at some point to make everybody real freaked out and to accept tyranny. That's what I think is going to happen relatively soon. But we'll see. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will, the lighter side of genocide. We'll be right back at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back live from the future, broadcasting from the sunny slave capital in Auckland. It's a nice, wonderful, tyrannical day. in the quote unquote least effing corrupt country in the world. God, I really hate this. I really hate this country so much. In a lot of ways. And hated a lot worse than so many others. you know, and it's just the grand difficulty that I have is tolerance, all right? I have become increasingly less tolerant after knowing how my country is truly run. When I go to political debates now, I am no longer going there willing to listen. I'm willing to listen, but I know that if I do, it's just going to F me off more.
It's just the same old, eh? You just know what they're going to say before it comes out their wheezy little mouth. You know what I mean? Yep. You just want to punch them in the mouth. My
methodology would be stab them in the eye socket with a pencil, but apparently you can't do that. That's called assault, brother.
I mean, here in Auckland, New Zealand,
it's unfair, isn't it, though, Will? Because a politician can wield a pencil and sign people's frickin' lives away on the dotted line and rip everybody's frickin' freedoms that thousands of New Zealanders died in conflicts around the world to protect. You know, but if up and try and threaten them with a pencil, oh, matey potato, you're a bad, naughty boy, and we're going to demonize you.
I've always thought, you know, like, since the age of sort of 15, if we're going to have police officers who are given a certain amount of power, and I think we do have to have police officers in society. I mean, I'm not against the whole idea, carte blanche, but I'm against a lot of the applications. They should be intelligent people. They should be well-read in history. They should know a bit of maths and science too. They should be well. If you're going to judge people, make sure you're in a position to. And that's what I think about police. But then, worse still, to give the police a break, some of the local politicians here in Auckland are like a damn circus act. I mean, they are just like Nikki Kaye and just these chicken-neck lesbian shills like Jacinda. They're just sickening pieces of trash. I mean, they're just the most disgusting-looking human beings with wicked souls you could imagine. Really?
But I'm tell not us even, what you really think, Will.
I mean, like, there's snotty-nosed little brat kids. You know, you remember the one in the class, that little teacher's pet sniveling little rat thing who wasn't really that smart, who was just good at regurgitating facts.
Yeah.
You know, just this little, you know, who puts all borders around her work and is real authoritarian, just good at sucking up to something she doesn't understand. That sort of person.
Yeah, you know, and speaking
that's,
of
pressure, that's a little toe wreck.
We have a caller here. It's Kathy in California. Kathy, can you hear us? Kathy, welcome to the show. Unfortunately, she doesn't seem to be able to hear what we're saying. But anyway,
thanks for the Patriot Act. 65 Democrats voted for the Patriot Act too, just so people know. Just because people think, oh, the left wouldn't do that. No, it's both sides, okay?
Yeah. Well, and see, that is another one of the look. Election time is the most frustrating time of year. I mean, it's like the opposite of Christmas because nobody gets any presents. But it's very similar to Christmas in the fact that about half the presents you do get, you want to take back anyway. But the problem is you can't because they're forced upon you. You know, that's the thing. And the difficulty is, you know, you can't go sit on John Key's knee and say, you know, what I want for Christmas is a government that's not tyrannical. And John Key will go, oh, yes, 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 send Santa a letter. Address it to the North Pole or some other non-existent facility. It just frustrates the living bejesus out of me because of the fact that I want to see progress, and I know for a fact that every single scumbag who I don't want to tar them all with a brush, but let's face facts here. If you stand for one of the mainstream parties, the likelihood is that you are a scumbag, or at the very least complicit in various forms of scumbaggery. And I will not.
Yeah, I mean,
vote
we can't write
ever,
everyone
and
off.
I will I'll encourage everybody to never vote for a mainstream party ever. Okay, because what the heck have they ever done for you other than privatize your assets, steal your civil rights away from you, get the country more in debt, and pollute our frickin' environment?
Don't vote for the lesser of two evils either. If you're going to vote for someone who you know, we all know politicians say one thing and do another. But vote for people you can really see something genuine in. Use your own discernment. Use your gut feeling. Don't let their propaganda influence your gut feelings. And vote for people who won't compromise your morals, really. Vote for people who have policy that matches your morals, not just on one specific issue, not just I'm voting for the Greens because, you know, they want to legalize something or other. I mean, that's not good enough. We need across the board. Dissolving the fiat banking system, dissolving the fiat health care system, which really just, you know, and benefits insurance companies and pharmaceuticals. We need to get past all these levels, all these layers. And if no one's standing on those issues, then don't vote.
Yep, that's right. And we have a caller here again. It might be Kathy. Let's see if she's actually there on the line with us. Kathy, can you hear us? Welcome to the show. You're going to have to speak up, girl.
Apparently we can't hear you, sorry. So no. We'll carry on. Technical difficulties here, folks.
Yeah.
I mean, you just think about the Patriot Act, though. I mean, if one document was just completely received just so much attention in a negative light over the last decade, not just in the United States, but the world over, it would have to be the Patriot Act. I mean, everyone knows what the Patriot Act is by now. It's been referenced in dozens of Hollywood movies. It's been the subject of so much controversy, and yet across the left, across the right, and yet still 275 traitors voted for it. Unbelievable. I mean, I just can't believe that. How far down the line are we now? I mean, what's it going to take?
Well, look at it this way. I mean, they're all doped up on pharmaceuticals, eating Starburst. You know, they got about as much nutritional information as the general public do. So my wager is that their brains are working on such low levels that they're not even capable of thinking about what they're doing to any great extent, you know? And that's on the one hand. On the other hand as well, they're the types, Will. They're just basically scumbags who have found a nice, cushy, frickin' job. Where they don't have to do jack except mince around with other scumbags of the same ilk and talk about BS all day frickin' long and get free air travel, free accommodation, free this, free that, and the other. And they say, well, this is a sweet frickin' deal. I'm going to stay here, conceivably forever. And if the only way that I can possibly ever get voted out or anything like that is if I do such a good job that I make my own job redundant... maybe I'll just do a crap job the whole time. That's probably a better idea because that gives me more job security.
Well, they say adversity makes the man, and maybe that's why these people are such chicken neck, pretty limp-wristed freaks. But I don't know. They don't deserve to be there. I mean, America can do better. I mean, your country was founded on solid ground, you know, a bedstone of principle. And then 230 years later, whatever, it's just gone down the gurgler. How did it get to that point? I mean, the American population still has some integrity. There are still, you know, vestiges of real people. Where is the representation for them? You know, there's Ron Paul, Rand Paul, Cynthia McKinney, Dennis Kucinich. There's a few here and there. a few here and there, but just by and large, you've got a bunch of just hot dog, head, bumbling idiots.
Kucinich voted for Obamacare, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you can't have everything, can you? I mean, Kucinich was good in the sense that he was open-minded, at least to the idea of, say, chemtrails. I mean, he's open-minded when it comes to auditing the Federal Reserve. I mean, yeah, but he's a bit of a leftist, and I guess you could argue that McKinney is also. You know,
yeah. We've got a
that's,
couple
that's
of
why
comments.
I only support. That's why I only support true right wingers. To be honest, myself. I mean, that's the honest
hold
truth.
Hold on, hold on. There's true right wingers in New Zealand now. When did this happen?
maybe not in establishment lines, but I mean, there are true right wingers in terms of people who understand, free market economics, the principle of the role of government. You know, but then there are just open-arm leftists who just want to hug the government and let the serpent completely entangle them. Those are the sort of people I don't respect, because although we may agree on a few issues, like when it comes to the war, when it comes to what they're doing to our environment with 1080 and all these toxins, they don't get the central principles of liberty. You know, for people to have power, government has to be disempowered. The only way government gets power is from people. And if they want to grow government, say, but we can have this big government that's good and provides health for everyone, it's just wholesome. It's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. We have to fundamentally get away from the idea of supporting a large governmental structure that just grows and seeks to expand, like the Bush government did 300%.
Yeah, well, and of course the Helen Clark government as well, not entirely dissimilar, trying to ban make it mandatory to have low flow shower heads, make it mandatory to have non incandescent light bulbs, to instead have the mercury filled ones, make it the ban vitamins bill as it was referred to basically give all of the ability to regulate any vitamins, minerals, natural supplements to an Australian multinational corporation, you know, and essentially they just make all of them illegal because, oh well, you know, you can't prove that vitamins are safe and effective, and not like you can prove vaccines are safe and effective, but you just watch how many billions of dollars they spend on them so they can jab you in the arm and send copious quantities of squalene and mercury into your freaking brain pan.
And I mean, like all these upholders of the mainstream version of reality, I mean, including all these little chicken little parliamentarians we have and local candidates we have, I mean, they would say we're just nitpicking, we're just looking for something to disagree with the system because we've got
it's
nothing
impossible.
We're jealous.
It's impossible say, to nitpick and because it's all effed.
Yeah, but they would just say, oh, picking on little things like, you know, 1080 poisoning or estrogen mimicking plastics, and oh, you're grasping at straws here. But then when you read what they stand for, what do they stand for? Just take any dozen at random and just look into their bios. What do they stand for? And it's just these open-ended vagaries. We love this country and we're going to improve the economy. And none of you know what the economy really is. So that way we can improve it even when it's going down the gurgler, and you'll still believe it's improving. You know, and it's just this sort of, they don't stand for anything. They're just plastic, retarded morons.
Yep. Well, they're retarded morons who think that they're smart and successful. You know, and I'll, to their credit, you know, they're certainly smart asses who are successful at being scum. You know,
some of them aren't totally stupid. They're smart. They're smart in orthodox ways, though. I mean, they're smart at, you know, following the what's on the roster today in Parliament, and you know, we're all going to get there in line, and we're going to vote on this one first. I mean, they're compartmentalised. You know, they're not smart when it comes to actually debating global or regional issues. I mean, no.
They're not. You know, and you've hit the nail on the head there. They're not up for. It's not up for debate. Okay, that is the main thing that I have difficulty with any political party is that they have party lines, and those party lines are not up for debate.
Well, they would argue, Vinny, because they compartmentalise everything. They would say, you know, even say if you and I got into Parliament tomorrow, it'd be, look, this isn't the place, isn't the time and the place for philosophical debates, okay? You should join a, you know, philosophy group or something. We're here to form policy, you know? It's always a time and a place for them, and they just divide everything up so no one can deal with the spectrum.
You know what I think? I think whenever you need to tell somebody that this isn't the time and place for a debate, it doesn't mean that there's not the time and the place. It just means you just don't want a frickin' debate because you'll lose it, you scumbag. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we'll be right back. Gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show that's all about trying to find some kind of frickin' way out of here on the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. In fact, technically, if you go to your web browser and you just type in Vinny Eastwood, automatically comes up with the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. You know,
your parting comment before the break, Vinny, about, you know, it's not the time or the place for debate. We've just heard it, you know, we've all heard it dozens of times. Family, friends, cowards everywhere, you know. It's not the time or place for debate. And that's just it. Any time Any time one of these fools wants to debate me, though, I'll make the time. I'll make the time. I mean, I had a debate with someone a couple of months ago on the side of the road from about 11 till 2:30 in the morning. And I mean, it was cold by then. It was freezing. And it ended on good terms, but I mean, this is it. I mean, a politician won't do that with you on the side of the street. A politician will get in your face, they'll call their little private security on you in about 10 seconds flat. And we've had that too.
Yeah.
But what is it with people? Why is it that someone as a paid representative can't just have a discussion on open terms, in an open-minded way, in the same way that someone who, you know, is not being paid, has no sort of vested interest, can?
Whoa, hold on a second. Being paid, having an open mind, I don't think they fit together well.
Well, it should have nothing to do. I mean, being paid is just a means to an end so they can buy all the junk they want from the supermarket and have the nice car and houses. It should have nothing to do with a debate on climate change or 9/11 or the Federal Reserve. I mean, it should absolutely have nothing to do.
Well, I mean, if they were to have open debates like that, I mean, their livelihood would be threatened, wouldn't it? And, you know, switching gears a little bit, and the subject of, like, UFOs and aliens and stuff like that always comes up every now and again. Even now, it's becoming more mainstream. Now, anybody who's heard about Project Bluebeam, it's a satellite network that's got holographic projection for which the documents that patent the thing so that they might stage alien invasions and things like that as a pretext for world government. Now, there's three interesting incidences that happened last year. Number one, a NORAD general said in April, I believe, that on November the 19th, there would be sightings of alien spacecraft around major cities on Earth. And I talked about that with a friend of my girlfriend's and said, look, this NORAD general actually said this. Don't you find that a little bit weird? And she goes, look, just because, he said it doesn't mean it's a fact and it's going to happen. And I say, well, look, that's not what I'm stipulating here. What I'm stipulating is that a NORAD general says this in the open. Maybe we should be paying a bit more attention to it. No. And there was this huge fight erupted, and it was just ridiculous. And then on the 19th of November, YouTube clips start coming in from all over the world of UFOs above major cities. And around the same time, the United Nations appoints their alien ambassador. That's right. If the aliens come down here and say, take me to your leader, they'll be led to this little astrophysicist
and this brings up a good point.
Malaysia.
This brings up a good point. Malaysia. But anyway, this brings up a good point. Why is it, we know all the dirty stuff the UN's involved in, why would you posture, Vinny, that the UN has an alien representative?
I would imagine that it'd probably be some kind of world-changing event if aliens actually came down. And as a result, humanity would suddenly see themselves as humanity as opposed to just seeing ourselves as New Zealanders, Australians, America, etc. And then we'd just go, oh, goodness sake, now there's other species out there. Humanity needs to unite under a loving socialist world government. And the UN will be our framework for government.
Yeah, well, that's one step. That's stage one, but also in a larger origins argument, going to the origins of man, everything's a false flag, and they know their evolutionist mainstream Darwin theory is failing, and so and because they're external and because they believe in the externalization of the hierarchy, people can look into this anyway. This is my conclusion on it, though. They are looking to reveal to the wider public their ultimate truth, and that is that man didn't just evolve from this planet, that they believe man was seeded here by an alien race, and that some of them here are of the alien race, Syrians and Pleiadians from Orion's belt. So this is where they're going with it. So they've got people who are creationists, you've got people who are evolutionists, and then they're posturing the third way, that we're a transposed race or a slave race to a higher order alien species and all this sort of stuff. And so it's their false flag in terms of origins, and then they want to unite people under their religion once everyone understands this.
Yeah. I mean, and PSYOP or not, I mean, if you have a look at ancient history and have a look at all the carvings and everything like that, there are dozens of stories about, you know, gods coming down from the heavens and reptiles and all of this kind of stuff, helping humanity to learn how to build, how to write, how to do lore and all of that kind of stuff. You know, it's really, really tripped out, whacked out stuff, right, by modern standards. Lots of disinfo, absolutely. You know, and it makes it kind of difficult to figure out. Now, some people would say, "Oh, it's too difficult to figure out. I'll just sit back and go, oh well, if it happens, it happens." And I tend to be more on that camp, you know, because I personally, I'm not an archaeologist or anything like that, so I can't expect to be able to disprove these things. But I keep an open mind, you know. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I'm not going to believe it 100% one way or the other, or actually argue for it because I can't actually prove it. Right.
That's me on the alien debate. I mean, why don't we stick to the things we know? Why don't we stick to all the scumbag people we think are human anyway, like Dick Cheney? Why don't we?
That's arguable.
and deal with what we can break down and actually prove. You know, because if there are aliens and they do have advanced technology and they can wipe us out, then what the hell can we do about it? No.
Yeah, I mean, I say don't bother trying to attack the non-human entities. Why don't you start attacking the anti-human entities, you know, like Dick Cheney, George W. Bush, Barack H. O'Berry, and Evelyn de Rothschild, and David Rockefeller. These are the true scum who are simply alien to humanity in the very sense of the word that matters, and they need to be cast off this planet. You listen to the Vinny East Show with Will. We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, broadcasting live from the future on Rush 89 FM in Hamilton. And now, if I remember correctly, iFinity FM in Invercargill has also picked up the show. And greetings also, welcome to the second hour for all our listeners on the online live streams at American Freedom Radio as well. We have a very special guest for you, ladies and gentlemen. His name is Phil Saxby from Normal New Zealand, and he's got quite the amount of experience when it comes to politicking and all that kind of jazz, and I'd like to welcome him to the show. Phil, welcome.
Thank you, well, and I'm pleased to be here.
Excellent, excellent. Hey, well, I'd love it. We've just got a short segment here. If you could just sort of lay out just sort of who you are, Phil, and how you got involved with Normal, because your political experience does not define specifically just to cannabis law reform, does it?
No, that's right. I started out sort of doing political things back in the 1970s with the Vietnam War protests in New Zealand, and then moved on to the anti-apartheid protests, which we ran in New Zealand very successfully, very big movement here in New Zealand against apartheid in South Africa. And then I went on to look at electoral reform, which I'd always been interested in. So we got proportional representation in New Zealand with an organisation called the Electoral Reform Coalition, and I was the secretary of that. And all that time I was in the Labour Party, and then I moved over to the Legalised Cannabis Party and helped. I was sort of asked to help start it up, so I was the secretary of the first secretary of the Legalised Cannabis Party in New Zealand.
Well, the Legalised Cannabis Party in New Zealand, I remember talking with Paul McMillan, I believe he's number 7 on the list of the party down in Dunedin, and he said that before the Green Party was set up, the Legalised Cannabis Party was getting a close to 4% of the vote, you know, just 1% below the threshold to get parliamentary representation. And then when the Green Party came in, just took all the votes away.
I think that's there's some truth in that, although the
not
actual
sure the
number
figures,
of votes that the Legalised Cannabis Party got when I was the secretary, the party votes was 1 2/3%. So we were 1/3 of the way to the 5% target. There were some seats, and Maori seats in particular, where we were getting around the 4% mark.
Well, and seeing as it's difficult to get political traction on an issue like cannabis law reform, because people see it as an isolated issue, and they want a party to represent a whole broad spectrum of things, not realizing, of course, because like most voters, they never do any analysis or even look at any policies that any party does before casting their vote, other than watching the television for a couple of hours at best. Well, basically, they don't realise that the cannabis law reform movement does tie into virtually every sector of government workings.
Well, the law reform movement certainly has campaigned in the past for, in the health area, medicinal cannabis. It's campaigned for hemp, and we have won that one. That was under the previous government. We now have legal hemp trials, and hemp is grown in New Zealand. So we've made some progress there, and the main one is human rights, and that's where I come in. Just going back to your point about the Greens, so I didn't answer your question fully there.
We can get back to that just after the break here. Ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest is Phil Saxby from Normal New Zealand, who's helped to set up the party there. And we're also going to be talking about electoral reform in New Zealand, because the MMP system is coming under the spotlight of recent times, and of course the cannabis issue as well. This is the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, back in a moment.
black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise.
Welcome. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Phil. Broadcasting live worldwide from the future, from the sunny slave capital in Auckland, New Zealand, the fabulous fluoride head paradise we have here in our parliamentary dictatorship of the Union. Our very special guest joining us live from the capital, Wellington, is Phil Saxby, the former head of Normal New Zealand, or in fact, he might even be the current head. Phil, welcome back.
Hello. And I am, in fact, the vice president, not the president now.
Aha! I knew I was wrong, which makes me right. Now,
you're right.
We wanted to go in. There was one topic that you and I were discussing last night, mate, is the incidence of drug law reform in Portugal. Now, I'm not 100% sure what's going on there, but apparently, and this has been in the news a little bit, they have relaxed their leanings towards current drug laws set by the UN, US, and various other tyrannical police state-type institutions, and they've been quite successful at it. Could you please divulge a little bit more?
Yes, certainly. There's information on the web about Portugal, but I hadn't realised at all until that the law changed in Portugal 10 years ago, in 2000, in response to what the Portuguese felt was a problem of drug problems getting out of control, and rather than just deal with one drug, cannabis, they decided that it was actually a wider issue. It was a big issue, and they decided that what they should do is treat all drug use as a health issue and not as a crime. So they moved all of that enforcement out of the police and into either a health related matters, health treatment sort of issues, or what they call commission of dissuasion. And that means that it's not a court. It's quite deliberately not a court. If you get referred, police, the only thing the police can do basically for possession is of any drug is of small amounts. Possession of any drug is they refer you to one of these commissions of dissuasion, and these are non-judicial authorities. They have a health person on them, a legal person, but like a lawyer, it doesn't have to be a judge or anything, and there's no court process as such.
Well, I mean, think about that versus the system that we currently have where, you're sick, therefore we're going to throw you in jail to protect you.
Exactly. Yes, no, it's far more sensible thing approach. Obviously, if somebody doesn't have a health problem, then they don't need any treatment. But if they do have an addiction or a health problem, then it may be that the Commission of Dissuasion will be able to direct them in the right direction and not just throw them in jail, as you say. Now, there is still some potential for imprisonment, selling to underage people, and there are other there are penalties that are not incarceration penalties. If you're a professional and you are a drug user, you could be restricted or limited in your the practice of your profession. So there are. It's not just, we're all happy, it's all relaxed now. There are certainly rules there, but it's managing those rules and taking a non-judicial approach, taking an approach that, okay, if someone's got a problem, we'll try and fix that and we'll help them if we can. But imprisonment or any sort of fines are the last resort. In fact, it says in the Act, I think, that the fining someone is considered to be the last resort. And what they've done as a result is they have dramatically reduce the number of deaths from drug-related deaths. From the pre-decriminalisation year of 1999, the number of drug deaths in Portugal was about 400. 6 years later, it was down to 290.
That's quite a remarkable drop.
You would think that every other country would be beating a pass to their door to say, how do you do it? You would think so.
Well, what I would think is it's very rare for a government to pass a law that actually solves a problem and reduces death.
Well, actually, New Zealand's really good at this. We've reduced road deaths, and I think the law has had something to do with that, and I believe that regulating, rather than just outright prohibition, is the way to go, and I think regulation works. And, it's, you know, we do actually do this in New Zealand. We've reduced our road deaths down hugely from the 1970s down to what they are now. And a part of that is spending money on roads and
airbags. Mainly due to the cars and the technology.
But it is actually regulation. What I'm saying is regulation actually does work, guys. Get the message. We do it everywhere else. Why don't we do it with drugs? It works.
Well, I suppose that regulation itself means that somebody has to take responsibility for the problem. And at the moment, we have a wonderful system where there's virtually no responsibility whatsoever, either on the part of the public or the police or criminal gangs or whatever contingents who are trying to make money off of illegal substances, whose prices are nice and high and very profitable because they're illegal.
Yeah, there's no doubt that there's a margin for illegal. If you have to make something illegally, then you have to the people who buy it have to take pay for the risk that's of the producer and the seller and so on are taking to get it to you. So obviously there is a margin there, and prices have dropped in Holland. The price of cannabis is lower in Holland, I'm told, than in neighbouring countries, because it is actually a regulated system, and so the price is a little bit lower. But that doesn't mean to say that Holland's got a huge cannabis problem. In fact, it's quite interesting. It has the lowest, one of the lowest teenage rates, use rates around, and we have one of the highest. We have, you know, along with Australia, we have the highest teenage use. The Dutch have one of the lowest rates. You can buy it as an adult legally in Holland, and of course, the tiny houses don't ask for ID, do they?
Well, yeah, and that's the difficulty with an unregulated market, isn't it, is that you
Absolutely.
Cannot control any description of consumption whatsoever. You cannot enforce, you can't license, you can't do anything, really.
You can't do anything.
All you can do is unlawfully search people based upon suspicion alone, and then pray to our God on high, Barack H. O'Barry, that they're carrying something on them.
Well, I think that the police find it quite convenient in some ways to have powers to search, because they can use them and find other things that they might have been looking for. But what it does amount to is that, you know, really, the law is a bit of a sham. There's about 1 or 2% of people getting arrested every year, which is, and even that is the highest rate in the world. New Zealand has one of the highest, I saw recently it was the highest rate. It's hard to believe, but I thought the USA would definitely be higher, but apparently I saw a figure that said that we have the highest arrest rate in the world, so we're certainly not the police are not slacking off on this. They are arresting people, but it still only amounts to about 2%, and you can guess who the 2% are. It's people who sort of look wrong, people with the wrong skin colour perhaps, you know, people who's, you know, got a car with a damaged light or something. They'll just have a little nosy around, won't they?
It's the tactic of a bully to basically try and pick on the people who can't actually defend themselves, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, they know that if they search cars, you know, that look that way, then they'll probably, you know, strike it lucky sooner or later, and they'll be able to do it legally, of course, just by you know, using the drug enforcement stuff. Now, you know, that's basically harassment, and that's why we're arguing that the current law is racist and discriminatory, because the effect of it is simply to mean that people who look as though they might be up to no good, you know, the police can just use powers that they wouldn't use against anyone else. They just wouldn't use those powers against somebody driving a Porsche, unless somebody was, you know, blue smoke in their face.
That's why I would argue against regulation in favour of saying if we had no drug regulation, you know, there wouldn't be this problem in the first place. You wouldn't make drug use desirable. You wouldn't make it criminal. You wouldn't make it underground, and you wouldn't have any reason to police such people.
Yeah, there'd be an argument for a libertarian argument, obviously, for free, total, you know, free use, no regulation at all. I think that we are, you know, in some ways closer to the alcohol campaigners then maybe sometimes appear. What we're saying is that there's a extreme at one end of free open market, you know, total commercial no regulation, just, you know, free market, commercial stuff, you know, whatever goes, whatever you can sell goes, let the buyer beware. And at the other end, you've got prohibition. Those are the two extremes. And what the alcohol people are saying is we've got to come back into the middle, somewhere in the middle, towards a better regulation system. It's too commercialised at the moment, too much advertising, too free, if you like, too free market. And what we're saying is that the drugs are at the other end, they're at the prohibition end, and they've got to come back into the middle. They've got to come back to a system of regulation, which, of course, is what we used to have. You know, people could buy cannabis as a medicine from the drugstore, from the pharmacy. And, you know, we had that before prohibition, and that's what we should go back to.
I don't know why people liken free market to total corporate takeover, though, because in a true free market, it's in the buyer's court. You know, so people vote with their wallets, and if someone doesn't like, you know, probably doesn't like the look of a corporation or their practices, then they'll be selected against, by way of expenditure. You know what I mean?
Well, so that's assuming that you have an informed public, though.
We have an informed public, and we don't have an informed public because we have regulation where the government works in with corporations and they come to cozy little deals and decide not to inform the public on, say, the dangers of smoking for decades, or the dangers of lead added in fuel for decades.
Or the lack of danger posed by cannabis use for decades.
Yeah, I would say a lot of problems can come about via regulation, because say we don't have a free market economy as such, but we still have a huge amount of corporate influence on government process at agricultural level, pharmaceutical level, banking level, and that is with a huge amount of regulation also.
Well, you've got regulation, you know, in countries like Egypt where the regulations are just used as a way for people, you know, people with some authority to get bribes, and it's basically a corrupt system from, you know, top to bottom in Tunisia and Egypt before this revolution. And that's what that revolution's about, is actually stopping the authorities using regulation to simply enrich the police or whoever gets, you know, the people who take them the bribes. But that's not the way it works in New Zealand. You know, we don't have police taking bribes. We do. Well, put it this way, I'm not saying there's no corruption at all. I'm just saying is that the corruption in the New Zealand system is internationally recognised as at the lowest, you know, right at the low end. We're in the top sort of three uncorrupt societies.
On the perception index.
But there's no reality index. I'm not saying it's not corrupt. I'm just saying, you know, we have a very, compared to Egypt, we have a very, very uncorrupt system. We have a very good public service. I mean, I used to be in the public service. I'm not going to defend everything they do, but, you know, people have got to realise that there's only one thing, only one power that's strong enough to stand against the corporates, and that's government. There's no other power that can stand against the corporate. So if you don't use the government in the public interest, that's what the whole point is. That's why we elect governments to act in the public interest.
But our government works for corporates, do they not?
No, well, they regulate the corporates.
How does our government get its money supply to issue to the New Zealand public?
It taxes people and corporates. But
How does it actually get the money supply to issue out into liquidity for the whole market, for this whole New Zealand economy to operate?
Well, every country in the world, the governments, collect money from tax and from, you know, GST, you know.
So money comes
from GST
tax.
And personal tax and other taxes, smaller taxes.
Well,
what Will's getting at here is that the power of the issuance of currency is almost as powerful as just being able to wield government taxes and all of that kind of stuff. And the institutions that currently deal out currency, things like the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, which basically the New Zealand Parliament, more or less, doesn't have too much sway over. They're treated as this sort of independent sort of authority, and they basically write their own rule book.
You're not spending real money if you just print it. If you're just saying, oh, the Reserve Bank can print money or something like that, you know, that's not real money. That's just inflation. That's just stealing money from the, you know, using inflation to steal money from other people.
We have real money now. You're saying we have a backed currency? You're saying we have something.
Yeah, look, we're here to talk about. I mean, I can talk about currency reform another time. But I'm certainly not to come along here to talk about currency reform.
I'm just interested because. you know, because you said government is our last wall against the corporations. Government is the only thing we have to defend us from corporations. I say that government in this country, since at least the days of Kirk, has worked for corporations. And I base that premise in saying that our money supply does not come from taxation.
Okay, well, you know, people like Winston Peters, people like Winston Peters are pointing out that the government is in the pocket of the corporations, right? Now, that's the problem. So what you've identified is the problem is that the government is too much in the pocket of people, and we've got to take back control of the government, you know, and that's the only way we're going to ever, you know, have any power against the corporations. Have you got any other ideas?
Yeah, I agree with you, Phil.
I've got an answer for taking back power from the corporations.
Yeah, good.
You have a free market. Yeah, it doesn't need. We don't need government to do our work for us.
Okay, that means the government, the corporations control everything if it's a free market.
People select against the corporations.
You say that's an interesting idea.
Government. People can disempower government. People can disempower corporations too.
Hey, hang on. I have two big supermarkets in Johnsonville. If I select against one, I'm selecting the other, and they're both owned by the same company.
Yeah, and they both sell all
I can't select against them. They're not regulated. I haven't got any select power at all.
This is a great point you just brought up. Let me just speak a minute. This is a great point you brought up. You said you've got two supermarkets in Johnsonville. If you select against one, you're selecting for the other. Who said the paradigm is two-party? Who said that's your only two options? What makes you think that in the whole freedom, the scope of human interaction on this planet, that you have two options for a source of food? What sort of narrowed perspective is that? And that is the problem with the system we have, and there's two parts.
Yeah, well, I'm Graham Owen, of course, but as you would expect me to do.
We can't do that. We couldn't do that. People have only done it for thousands of years.
Yeah, and what's interesting, Phil, is that the U.S. government in particular is now cracking down on people being able to supply their own food. There's an article from Natural News not too long ago where a man was charged $5,000 for growing a organic garden in his backyard.
Really?
Yeah, man. So it's really freaky right now. And Will's right to a certain extent, because the government and corporations have started to come together and say Monsanto, for example, one of the largest agricultural corporations in the world, is now lobbying government to such an extent that they're basically able to make government, well, not make, but, you know, more or less, they're able to get them to pass legislation which is in their best corporate interest. Now, this is what lobbying is all about, right? And I think that there should be a certain extent of lobbying with government, because obviously people need to have a say in some description of the word. But when it becomes disproportionate, when the voice of the people gets drowned out by the voice of the corporations, that's when we've got corporatism. And as Mussolini said, corporatism should be more correctly termed fascism, because it's when the interests of the corporation take over that of the state. That's fascism.
Hey, you've been reading John Rawls's Saul, have you?
No, I don't read.
Yeah, no, that's good. No, I'm right on with you there. Yes, the corporate. The people have to understand.
Yeah,
the corporate sector is the all powerful thing in a modern society. Yep.
Yeah. Well, moving on, back to the MMP debate here, because we're coming up to a referendum here, Phil, and my considered opinion is that the government, particularly the National Party and Labour parties, are pushing so that the... we'll go to break.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab. And
welcome back,
I
ladies and gentlemen,
outside.
To the Vin Eastwood Show with Will. On American Freedom Radio, and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, broadcasting live from the future. Our very special guest joining us live from Johnsonville in Wellington is Phil Saxby from normal.org.nz. Phil, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, and just before we got cut off on the break, before we wanted to go into MMP, and I'd love it if you could actually break this down for me, because one thing that we didn't get to address earlier on was how the Greens kind of came in under MMP, and considering we've got an international audience, could you define what it actually is?
Oh, sure. MMP can be defined in one fairly long sentence, but I'll do it in several sentences to make it a bit easier. Basically, it's a proportional system where people get two votes. If you vote, you get one vote for a party, so that's the proportional part. Every party gets representation in proportion, so that if a party gets 5% of the vote, they get 5% of the seats. And the second vote is a vote in a, for a person in your own local area. So it's a geographical electorate, like you have in the United States and many countries, with just one member in that electorate, in that seat, as we call it. And so at the end of the day, there will be 60 or so members elected from the electorates, and every party will get extra members of parliament to top it up to its fair share. That's how it works. Okay. The only little extra wrinkle is that you do need to have a 5%. You have to get 5% of the party vote to get any extra seats from this topping up process. Or you have to win one of the electorate seats, okay? And there are, as well as the 60 or so general seats covering the whole of New Zealand, there is 7 Maori seats open to people who are of Maori descent, and they also cover the whole of New Zealand. The New Zealand's divided up into two lots of electorates, Maori electorates and general electorates.
Okay. Now, in terms of the Green Party, when they first came in, it's just like these parties, and this is the cool thing about New Zealand, I find, is that parties that are very, very, very small, like the Greens, actually have a shot at getting in. Now, transitioning from that, of course, what happened to the Aotearoa Legalised Cannabis Party once the Greens got in? Because they also campaigned on a harm minimisation platform and kind of trumped the vote to a certain extent, in my opinion.
Well, the Legalised Cannabis Party did get, as I say, one third of the way to the target of 5% at its first shot. And then on the second time round, it actually dropped back. And one of the reasons for that was that the Greens recruited one of our leading candidates, one of the party's leading candidates, a Legalised Cannabis Party candidates. He was on the Legalised Party Cannabis Party list, and he then joined the Greens and was elected in a Member of Parliament for the Greens. So it was really one election when there was no competition, and the Legalised Cannabis Party got about 1.66%. The following election, they got 1.4%, and the Greens got over the 5% threshold and brought Nandor Tanchos into Parliament.
Mm-hmm. And many current Green MPs and former Green MPs have actually had their teeth cut in the political spectrum with the Aotearoa Legalised Cannabis Party, like, for example, Matiria Ture, yes?
Yes, Matiria is another success story, if you like, for Normal, because she was Secretary of Normal and also a candidate on the Legalised Cannabis Party list. And she followed Nandor into Parliament and is now the co-leader of the Greens Party.
And we've interviewed her before on the show, and she's a very, very lovely woman. And I would think that, well, any kind of political diversity needs to really, really be emphasised, I think. And this is something that really ticked me off about the Botany by-election conference that happened last night, is that there were 10 candidates for the by-election, and they only allowed 5 of them. not including the legalized cannabis party people, because, oh, well, it'd be too difficult to organize. Well, if democracy is too difficult to organize for you, and let's just say I'm not devoting democracy because it simply doesn't work with an uninformed, uneducated, brainwashed public, operatively, the consequences of not allowing some voices to be heard and only allowing others are absolutely dire, in my opinion. And this is why this is one reason why I like MMP, but also, on the other hand, a lot of people have different opinions about it. It's not like first past the post would be any better, but I don't fully understand the system, and maybe that's a good thing.
Well, it's probably just as well that some people don't really understand the system, but in general, you can't really go wrong. If you choose the person that you want to represent you in your local area as the best person, you know, the person that you think is the best qualified to do that job, and that might be a different party from your normal, the one you normally support. But if you choose that best person, you can't really go wrong. You know, you might not win, but you know you've made your honest choice. And if you choose the party that you would like to be in the government or running the government, better still even, and you just vote for that party, you can't go wrong. Doesn't matter what other considerations happen about, you know, what parties that qualify based on the sort of MPs that get in from the party list and not from the electorate and all that sort of thing. Really, you can't do any better than simply make the most honest choice you can of your best candidate and your best, you know, party, best person for the candidate, for the electorate, and your first choice of party. Don't do anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've participated in a number of elections, and the very first election when I knew nothing, I voted for the Greens. The second election when I knew a fair amount, really, I mean, I voted for the legalized cannabis party. And in this next election, I know a little bit more than that, so I'm voting no confidence, because I literally have no confidence in the system. It seems like the progression of economics, the progression of political debate seems to be going in one direction, taking away people's civil liberties, selling out the country to offshore interests, and basically subverting any type of political or judicial process to a dog and pony show. You know, no real change ever seems to come out from the voting process. It's why I get involved in politics day in and day out, because you have to tell your governments on a daily basis what they do. People out there who think that they can change policy or even really have a terribly large amount of sway or influence in the country by ticking a box on a piece of paper once every 3 years, you've got to be out of your mind, in my opinion.
Well, obviously, I mean, it's just a mathematical fact that, you know, if you cast one vote out of 2 million, your 1/2 millionth of a share in the actual election is going to be pretty small. And if you don't want to vote, then don't vote. But what you are doing during the year is obviously the important thing. And if you're doing what you are obviously doing, then, you know, you're actually helping people to be part of a democracy, because you're helping them to be informed. So I think, you know, you're certainly taking part in our New Zealand democracy if you're doing that, and you don't have to vote. That's the least of your, the lowest level, if you like, and you don't have to do that. It's not, as you say, it's 1/2 millionth or something.
It's just our candidates that worry me the most. I mean, even if we, you know, whether we decide to vote or not, I mean, what philosophical grounds are they running upon concerns me. And, you know, just going back to our corporation-government debate, I mean, what makes people feel that government or corporations have any different intention?
Well, we can see the results in what they do. We can see when we have corporations in charge of things, they may well try and cut corners if they're allowed to. Who knows? The Pike River disaster could have been caused by corner cutting. I've heard some rumours of that kind. I don't know if you have. So corporations will do, if they are not regulated, they will basically do whatever they can to just achieve their purpose, which is to make money. And everyone knows that, so that's all quite straightforward, and everyone's very honest and everything like that. Some people have to close their eyes to it a little bit, but they do know that that's the purpose of the corporation. The purpose of government is to act in the public interest. Now, if you think the National Party represents the public interest better than every other party, then you obviously should be, you know, either voting for it or have some reason in your own head as to why you don't believe in the public interest, why you think the public interest is against your own private interest.
Essentially, though, a corporation, if a corporation wants to make the most money, then they should serve the public interest also.
No.
See, but they don't.
Why
when
they?
Governments...
No one ever asked them to do that.
Well, they have to, because if you want to sell lemon-flavoured chilli on dog shit, sorry, excuse my French, is
yeah,
it
you can't say that stuff on the FCC regulations.
Oh, sorry, yeah. But what I'm saying is that in China they sold poisoned milk because it was cheaper.
If you
and then it got found out.
How much are you going to sell? How much are you going to make? How much money are you going to make? So corporations serve public interest the same way government does.
No, it's completely false. That's completely false and a complete misunderstanding. The corporation has no obligation to the public whatsoever unless
my
the public
does.
You've bought into this whole bloody right-wing crap that I'm fight all every day of my life. What are you going on about? You can't possibly believe that corporations are acting in the public interest.
No,
they
I
only
didn't
act
say
in the public
that.
Interest
I
by accident.
No.
Only by accident.
Let me talk for a minute here. Let me talk
sure?
for a minute. We have
so you think the market works?
Where we have governments working in with corporations. You feel they're different people. If you break
yes.
it down, a government is comprised of individuals who have certain belief structures. A corporation is comprised of individuals who have certain belief structures. Taking
well,
apart your preconceived notion that one just wants to make money and the other one wants to serve the public. If you
yep.
understand the individuals behind them, you'll see they're interchangeable. Hence why...
Yeah. That's the revolving door, isn't it?
Hang on. The people that are in the public...
Let me carry this on.
Yeah, go on.
Hence why many corporates find themselves in government jobs and vice versa. They have similar ideologies. If you look a bit closer, you'll find they're in similar groups, similar organisations, similar schools, similar cliques. You'll find that they have similar intentions for society. That's why they work so well together. If you reduce the size of government... You give corporations a smaller tool to bash people's brains out with daily.
No, you give the corporations more freedom to do their own bashing.
No. You give them more freedom.
You're just going to create poisoned milk in New Zealand like they have in China.
No, sorry.
If you're going to reduce the role of government.
You give them more freedom, but freedom without protection, if they're not in cahoots with the government, if they're not receiving money from them, freedom without protection is dangerous to a corporation.
Yeah.
Understand that. Freedom is dangerous. Freedom is living by a knife edge. If you then have this insulating level or layer of government, they can do what they want. The government will cover up for them. They'll get immunity via regulation and legislation and so on. You see what I mean there? And then, okay, take away the corporates and we just have this nice, loving government running things. Where's the oversight? We can't even get oversight into who New Zealand owes its foreign debt to, and that's expanding at a rate of over $300 million a week. And so where's this great government you speak of that serves the public
interest?
It's
$450 million a week now, according to the ANZ analyst.
I'm just giving them the benefit of the doubt. Where is this public interest that's being fulfilled?
So you're saying that it's better to have no government, even if it's only partly committed to public interest?
Don't say what I'm saying. Tell me why it's better to have a government that keeps its debt completely secret from New Zealand public as it expands, you know, millions of dollars on each person's head every week.
Look, you know, it's about whether you think the market to, you know, the corporations want the market to basically be the only arbiter of everything, and you're basically saying the market is going to work, and that's what the corporations say. What I'm saying is the market is a way for the corporate, if you just leave everything to the market, you will just simply leave it to for the corporations to do anything they want. Now, what I'm saying is the only power that can possibly stop that, the only power that can limit that is government.
Hold on. Will, can you just let Phil speak, please?
The only power that can actually control corporations simply using market forces to do whatever they like is government. And that's what we've been doing, you know, like from, you know, before democracies. This happened, you know, governments felt some need to try and control market behaviour before democracy came along. The difference with democracy is that we actually choose the people that are going to have this role. And although we might make bad choices, and although, yeah, hang on, because the corporates might well try and influence bad choices. Hang on, am I talking or am I not? Am I going to hang up on you or not?
That's your choice, free market.
Yeah, fine. What I'm saying is, you know, I'm actually explaining to you that we are choosing, we choose the government, right? We may, the corporates may influence our choices and may, you know, as you say, brainwash us or try and make us choose the government that's friendly to them. Obviously, why wouldn't they? They've got the money to spend, so they will naturally try and make people choose the government that's friendly to them. But everybody knows that the purpose of government, the purpose of the government is to act in the public good. Even people who are absolutely adamant that, you know, they hate politicians will tell you that they believe politicians, the purpose of politicians is, that should be, to act in the public good.
That's right. I completely agree there, Phil.
I agree too.
That's the belief, but the reality is sometimes a little bit skewed. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special guest is Phil Saxby, coming to us live from Wellington. Final segment after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, the show that's all about business time. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Our very special guest joining us for the final segment today is Phil Saxby, coming at us live from Johnsonville in Wellington, I believe. Phil, welcome back.
Yeah, and it's a very, very sunny day here in Wellington, a magnificent February in New Zealand. Come and join us.
Yeah, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, in the Gulf of Oil Kano, pack up, come to New Zealand for a nice summer holiday.
So, Phil, I think we're misunderstanding each other a bit here. I mean, I'm not a right-wing conservative in the sense that John Key supposedly is, or the National Party, or any of those shills. I'm someone who believes in freedom. And I see government as a big middleman. And if you try and sanitize reality, if you try and sanitize the world we live in at all and make it more safe and friendly and more cozy for everyone and put cotton wool in every corner, you'll only ever make it more dangerous. You'll only ever make it more dangerous. You'll only ever cost people lives. You'll only ever cost people freedoms. I'm against the Patriot Act because I don't believe that sacrificing certain liberties gives me more freedom. In the same way, I'm against growing government to protect me from people I can protect myself from. See? Because Nikki Kaye down the road is no more capable than me. In fact, the little turd is far less capable. And so I don't need... What we need is a code where government can't trample over people and corporations can't trample over people. But then other than that, we don't need too much. That's my argument. But I'd like to hear what you've got to say on that.
Yeah. Well, one thing I wanted to ask you, Phil, is have you heard about the constitutional jury standpoint where if a politician refuses to answer a question or doesn't answer it to any great effect, you can then go to a jury of your peers and say, look, I need these questions answered. Here's why. It's important to the country. And if the jury agrees with your case, okay, great. That politician's not doing their job. They're in a fiduciary position of responsibility and they're not performing their duties. Okay, we suspend them until they do.
Well, all I can say is that only in America would people dream of trying to use the law to make politics work. I can't believe that I'm hearing this. This is just weird to me. You know, you go and find out from the politicians what the story is. You get your journalists, you drum up stuff. You know, you actually take part in politics. That's how you get your solve political problems. You don't go to the law courts and try and do it. That's the most expensive way of trying to solve anything. We only use it for the most rare decisions of, you know, incarceration and stuff like that.
Oh, no. What we're talking about here is a completely different thing. A constitutional jury system has never existed anywhere ever before because the Crown and the judiciary have what's known as sovereign immunity so that they can't be second-guessed and they are more or less above reproach.
Yeah, we know and,
this is still just the American legalistic sort of approach to solving a problem, though, taking it to court, making lawyers rich. I don't believe in that one. Sorry.
Vinny. Cutting out the lawyers as well. It's citizens explaining to another group of citizens what's happening, and then the citizens make the decision. There's no lawyers or judges involved here.
I'd love to see a model for this. I've never heard of it before.
Anyway, Vinny, we're arguing details. I want to know just on a general principle basis here, Phil. Do you believe that by growing the size of government, we can empower people?
Even the framing of that question is just absolutely appalling.
Why? It's a simple question.
We can reduce the size of government and increase the power.
Government itself has no power, right?
We can reduce the size of government and increase its power easily.
Pardon, sorry, can you repeat that, Phil?
We can reduce the size of government and increase its power easily.
Yeah. Well, I would say that public participation in politics, I think, is kind of like at an all time low. Wouldn't you agree, Phil? And this kind of leads to an awful lot of political apathy. I mean, I'm sure in your experience, going out and trying to inform the public of things that aren't totally mainstream, like for example, cannabis is not dangerous and that sort of thing, you encounter a lot of apathy within the general populace. And my explanation for this is that because people are not intricately involved in the political process on a daily basis, it really fosters that apathy. And so, therefore, critical analysis of government activity becomes much, much less. And therefore, they can probably get away with a lot, lot more.
Well, it's a big question. I think that it's quite possible for citizens to have a very profound effect on governments, and that applies in New Zealand just as much as it does in Egypt. I'm really surprised that anybody's asking that question today after Egypt and Tunisia, and today Bahrain and Yemen, or tomorrow Bahrain and Yemen. You know, people can do it. You know, it doesn't. It's actually, we've done it before. We got MMP. You know, we got ACC, a world first system. This is government acting in the public interest to do something which is done better in New Zealand than anywhere else in the world.
The public, is fluoride in the public interest? Is aspartame in the public interest?
Accident compensation system. Accident ACC. Accident compensation.
Is fluoride in the water in the public interest? Is aspartame in soft drinks in the public interest? Is estrogen mimicking plastics in our foods and water containers, is that in the public interest? Is that government serving the public interest?
Hang on, I haven't heard of half of these things. What are you talking about?
Of course you haven't, because you believe in the system so much. This
no,
is
I don't. I'm just saying
this
if, you know,
does,
if there's a serious problem,
and
half of
it and go along with everything.
Yeah, if the problems like DDT and that in the food chain were not recognised, and then people had to protest, and then, you know, we got the DDT
fluoride added to water. Fluoride
you know,
added to the public
how you do
water
it.
Supply.
It's politics.
It's politics. Is it? Are they enacting? We can have 90% of Europe against it. It's banned all throughout Europe. The EU's banned it even. And New Zealand, somehow our government is maintaining the public interest by pumping fluoride through our water supplies. Labour, National, regardless, Green Party, you name it.
Yeah, and that's the point we're trying to define.
I mean, no, allow Phil to answer. Allow Phil to answer, Vinny.
Even the nutcases support fluoridation. Half of the nutcases support fluoridation. I'm really surprised that you're opposed.
Mm-hmm. Well,
So you can't.
I'm saying half the nutcases support fluoridation. The other half, obviously, are opposed to it.
It's amazing, Phil. Come on, he's picked
up. I mean, I just talked to a real nutcase, a really bad religious nutter from originally from America, who's now living in Gisborne. God, it was terrible. And of course, you know, he actually admitted that the fluoridation might be the one of those rare cases where government got it right. And I thought, you know, every other thing we believe in, you know, we're just completely opposed.
But you haven't got an opinion on fluoride. You just think it's good because government does it. Interesting.